Hey, Greg Wyshynski, guess who invented oxygen?
I don't know Jeff Merrick, who?
He wears number 87. Guess who's working on a cure for cancer?
Who, Jeff Merrick?
He wears number 87. Guess who, in the off-season cures lepers?
Who would that be, Jeff Merrick?
Sidney Crosby, who's back like a vertebrae tonight for the Penguins.
I thought we were talking about Donald Brashear. Did he wear 87?
He did. He did, as a matter of fact. Headline of the day, Greg Wyshynski, Sidney Crosby returns. Take that, David Steckel. I'm looking at you too, Victor Hedman, in the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup, playing with Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis. Today, as you put on Puck Day, was it the, how did you phrase it, today's program? It's the Sidney Crosby overload edition?
It's the Sidney Crosby overkill edition, sir.
Okay.
It is amazing to me in the last 24 hours. I think the Canadian media has kept the airline industry afloat in the last 24 hours with the amount of tickets being purchased to fly to Pittsburgh en masse and cover the return of the Christ child to the ice this evening against the New York Islanders.
This is Occupy Pittsburgh. And it's not hippies either, and it's not, you know, the 99%ers. That would be Wayne Gretzky. This is the mob of Canadian media that made its way at the drop of a dime down to Pittsburgh to the Console Energy Center, to the point where Matt Cook and James Neal were saying, you know, I know we sit next to this guy. Can we please get dressed, please?
Listen,
for
you're
the skate
Canadian
today.
You're Canadian. Can you tell me if Sid scores a goal in his first shot tonight?
Oh,
what's the turnaround time for a postage stamp? Is it like a day or two? Will they wait till next week to do the stamp? Like, how long will it take them to freeze frame that like the golden goal?
I don't know that it's a stamp, Greg, as much as he becomes a picture on our currency. I think that might be it for John A. McDonald and in Sidney Crosby.
Well, here's the real question. Will he join the other kids already playing on your currency, or will it be a different hockey picture on your money?
Altogether, this will be, I'm sorry, Queen Elizabeth, but you're going to have to go. I know we sort of pretend we have a thin link to the monarchy still in England, but no, this is new royalty in Canada if he scores on the first shot tonight.
Look, I kid because I love. I'm making this to be a Canadian-centric thing. It's not. It's the biggest story right now in hockey across the globe. And I know this because of one thing. Every Sunday, I drive around with the wife and we go food shopping. We go to the supermarket. My only lifeline to sports is listening to ESPN Radio's coverage of the NFL. Okay? Getting scores, getting highlights, getting interviews, that whole thing. Every single Sunday, I listen to their between segments sports report, and they mention every single ESPN owned sports property.
Mm-hmm.
Racing, football, college basketball, poker, tiddlywinks, whatever the hell. They never mention hockey save for this Sunday when they made the time in between telling us when the next airing of Outside the Lines will be to mention Sidney Crosby's return for the Penguins. The story is so important that ESPN was willing to talk about it even though they don't have the rights to the games. That's impressive.
I am as guilty as anyone else in sport, in Canadian TV sports, specifically hockey, as anyone else, for in the beginning of every highlight pack that I've ever done this year for Sportsnet specifically, where there's a Pittsburgh Penguin game playing, every intro goes like this. Well, despite not having Sidney Crosby in the lineup, the Pittsburgh Penguins took to the ice tonight against the Colorado Avalanche, took to the ice tonight against the New York Islanders, took to the ice tonight against the Battle of the Keystone State with the Philadelphia Flyers. Everything has a reference to the fact that Sidney Crosby is not in the lineup.
Yeah, for sure. Coming up on the show today, by the way, Crosby, we'll also be talking about Sidney. We'll also be talking about Sid the Kid and number 87 as well.
The kid from Cole Harbour?
The kid from Cole Harbour.
Who scored the golden goal?
Along with, I don't recall that happening, that along with puck headlines, including the release of the Flyers Winter Classic jerseys. We'll talk about that today.
Don't like it.
Teams that are on the hot seat, Carolina, Anaheim, Washington. We'll talk about those teams in the second half of the program, along with talking points. And also, if we get a chance to squeeze it in, we may mention something about Sidney Crosby's first game since January.
Well, you know what? Let's lead then with Sidney Crosby's first game, going back to a game after the Winter Classic against the Tampa Bay Lightning last January. Rob Rossi joins us on the line now. Rob, thanks. I know it's a tough time for everyone in Pittsburgh right now, specifically in the media, because of all the responsibilities. So we'll preface this by thanking you for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us. But set the scene for us, Picasso. Paint one in Pittsburgh. What's it like?
Well, you know, today, like I said, today's sitting this for me because I get to stop writing about his concussion and start writing about his actual play on the ice, which has been a a long time coming. So it's nuts. It's about a Stanley Cup final type thing in terms of the media attention. I think the Penguins had 250 media credentials requested for the game. I don't know if that many people were actually be able to make it in, but it was pretty nuts today. 19 people, I think 19 cameras surrounded the locker before he got there. And, you know, it's going to be a sideshow. I think everybody expected that. It remains to be seen how he'll be used on the ice. Dan said yesterday about 12 minutes. I think that'll probably be about 15 if the game's close. But, you know, he's had a flair for doing some amazing things when the spotlight's on him. So I think a lot of people are expecting him to sort of announce his presence with authority today. I think if he just gets through the game without any sort of repairing symptoms and is able to sort of look like the player in terms of the north-south game that he likes to play and down low and along the boards, if he's able to be that guy, even if he doesn't score a goal or record a point or even register a shot, I think everybody in Pittsburgh would be happy with that. But the expectations are enormous, and that's what happens when you're Sidney Crosby.
And obviously, if they get a little bit of power play time against the Islanders, we'll probably see him on the ice a little bit more as well. Rossi, there are some people out there that are thinking, okay, this Pittsburgh Penguins team is pretty used to not playing with Sidney Crosby. They're a team that's 11-6-3 overall, 25 points, a pretty damn good hockey team. Is there a chance that Sidney Crosby's return could upset the apple cart, sir, and the Penguins are going to have to take some time to get used to him being back?
Better healthy scratch him.
Look, I remind people that I think 3 days before the Winter Classic, and this was without Jordan Staal, who's probably been their best overall forward, in Crosby's absence, at least this year, and with Evgeny Malkin not performing at the level we're customary to seeing him, they won 12 games in a row last year and looked like the clear best team in hockey. So you're basically adding Staal and Crosby to that mix. I talked to Matt Cook last night, and he said something really, really insightful to me anyway. He said, I asked him point blank, I said, you know, you guys, if you're healthy, there's no excuses. You know, you're a team that's supposed to win championships, not one. And then he said, I don't know of too many examples of a core being kept together like ours has been since the lockout. And he said, the last 2 years haven't ended the way we've wanted. We can say it was because of injuries and fatigue the year before. But the bottom line is if this team's healthy, the expectation should be to win the Stanley Cup. Now, that doesn't mean it's a failure if they don't. But it does mean that, you know, the Penguins players view themselves as the team to beat. And they view themselves as a team that, if healthy, doesn't have any, you know, wiggle room to say, here's why we didn't win. They've got an elite goalie. They've got three elite centermen. They've got a deceptively deep group of wingers led by an emerging star, it looks like, in James Neal, and a really, really stout defense. You know, people in Pittsburgh have been killing Paul Martin all year, but he'll be the number four defenseman on this team when they're healthy. And they got a pretty good coach, too, who's done a lot of good work to get them to being one of the better record teams in the league without Crosby and Malkin and all these injuries. So I can't see how this is going to upset the apple. I can't see how adding Sidney Crosby to this mix doesn't make them even better. But you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong a lot these days.
Well, we all have been as regards to Sidney. I thought it was going to be Dallas, then I thought it was going to be Colorado, and then the island. I kind of had an inkling when they called up McIntyre last week and said, yeah, maybe they want to, even though McIntyre just played, I think, like 2 minutes in the game against Tampa. Maybe that's them calling up the muscle because Crosby's on the horizon. A three-game homestand this week before Saturday at the Bell Center against the Montreal Canadiens. To me, Rob, this seems like Crosby's going to go on emotion and adrenaline tonight. What's the bigger litmus test for Crosby in your mind? Tonight against the Islanders or Wednesday against the Blues?
Well, it's tough to think the Blues would be a litmus test for anybody, right?
They're hot now.
Probably Wednesday. Yeah, I know. They're playing much better right now than earlier in the season. So, I actually think probably this weekend will be the ultimate litmus test.
The back-to-back?
Today he's going to get his feet under him. Wednesday will be back to somewhat normal. But then, you know, then you're a hockey player again. And then you've had two games under your belt, and you got back to back, and one of them's on the road, and one of them's in the pressure cooker that is Montreal. And you know, I would think by early next week we'll have a pretty good gauge on just how far Sidney has to go to be the guy we knew. I think it's unfair to expect him to be the, you know, 1.69 point per game guy or whatever that he was when he left. I mean, I think It's easy to overlook now. When he left, he was going to a place that very few players ever have gone. It looks like anyway, but. You know, can he go out there and, you know, I joked last night, I said he'd need to average 1.8 something to conceivably pass Phil Kessel for the scoring lead by the end of the year. And I don't think that's a lot of realistic expectations there. But, you know, I'd be pretty surprised if by the end of this year he's not a top 10 scorer. I mean, he just he has that skill set, and he looks that good in practice.
Rossi, ultimately, where did this decision come down from? I mean, we've heard so much about him being cleared for contact. I know he saw the doctors. They gave him the final green light. But do you think it was more a case of Sidney having to be physically ready to get back into this thing, or he's needed a couple weeks to get his head straight and get ready for the magnitude of this return?
Yeah, I think he's been physically ready for a while. You know, I talking to his teammates last week and then last night, it was more a case of they noticed something kick into another gear when he came back from the West Coast trip. There was a beginning of the month, there was a West Coast trip to San Jose and L.A. He left that a day early to visit with his medical team. I don't know if he also saw the chiropractor in addition to the medical guys in Pittsburgh, but everybody said when he came back from that, he looked intense. He had that fire, that sort of that level of attitude, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, that separates him from everybody else in the league. I remember one day after practice, he was just visibly upset. He was just sick of talking about it. Mm-hmm. He looked agitated that he couldn't get any contact and all that. And I think he needed to take himself to sort of this darker place to finish this off. You know, the preparation mode that he'll get to there, where he can just zero in and, like I said, put himself into this sort of black hole of just, here's what I need to do to be the guy I can be. And he didn't want to come back and be anything less than that guy. So once he started doing that, Pascal Dupuis said you could see that the past 10 days. Once he started doing that, I think it was just a matter of time. He looked at this stretch and said, look, this is, you know, three home games, a game in Montreal, so there's four games this week. This is the time to try it out. And I think that was that's the decision he came to probably this week or last week, this weekend on the dad's trip, and just said, look, it's time. And I'm sure having his dad in town and you know, having the Penguins in Florida where he could really just sort of sit down and have a long talk about this with, you know, the people we trust in his personal life and in the organization, you know, and they weren't going to rush him, and they didn't. But I think now it's like, you know, I said this from the very beginning, guys. He was going to make the decision on when he was going to play because, as far as I knew, the medical team had said, it's now in your hands. You know, we think you're ready. So he made the decision, and we'll see.
Good stuff, Rossi. Real quick, one last question. Bigger story, Sidney Crosby returning for the Penguins tonight or CM Punk taking the title at
MSG
on
Sunday? Oh,
that was huge.
Well, you know, as long as Punk keeps doing the Macho Man elbow drop and wearing stars on his fights, I'm always going to side with him. So, best in the world.
All right.
Sidney's a third line center tonight, guys. Punk's the best in the world.
Go see him, Punk. Thanks, Chicago man. Represent. All right, very good.
All right, Rossi, thanks, man. Or
what was the bigger event this weekend? The Henderson Hua fight in UFC 139, which is one of, if not the greatest UFC throwdowns of all time, period.
Wow.
Yeah, man, it was...
No, I'd still go... I go CM Punk, yeah. Then Sid, and then what you said. All right, let's start the show.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet and Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Yeah! John Sebastian! All this for Zbinek Mihalik? Wow. And what does this mean? What does this mean for Joe Vitale?
I thought this was in honor of Movember, considering that Gabe Kaplan.
Yeah. The best mustache this side of John Cheech Garrett.
Yes, it's Sidney Crosby's return to the National Hockey League tonight. Everybody's very excited. I know the Puck Daddy readership's excited. Our Hit the Sid contest, or Hit the Kid,
I love this,
that we released this morning, where you pick the Islander who hits Sidney Crosby first. The entries for this contest, as we tape this show in the early afternoon, or stream it live as well, the entries have reached 500. We have 500 readers now entered the contest.
Is there a consensus yet? Is there a... who's the strongest candidate? Is it Steos? Is it a kid like Hamonic or Niederreiter? Is it a Jay Pandolfo?
Seeing a lot of Hamonic, a lot of Steos,
yeah.
And seeing a few people that have it in their head that it'll be John Tavares hitting Crosby in a calling card moment for the young superstar.
See, that would be, I'll see your Coal Harbor and raise you in Oakville. That would be 905 represents right there. Wow, that would be the sort of, you know. And in net tonight, by the way, we should point out, and I want to talk about the Islanders' point of view here for a second, Greg. In net for the Islanders tonight will not be their now, I guess maybe he always was, their number one netminder. Rick DiPietro will not start tonight for the New York Islanders. It will be making his, I guess his not debut, but his first start is Anders Nilsson, who was called up from the Bridgeport Sound Tigers after playing seven games with the ST. And does this in any way, shape, or form appear to you to be a licking of the envelope by the Islanders in advance of this one?
As I said on Twitter before, sir, I guess the second option didn't pan out, which was a giant neon arrow pointing at the goal and a banner flashing above it that said, "Sydney, hit it here." Good God.
Wouldn't it be great if there were like one game sponsorships of the NHL, like a very particular game, like you see Anders Nilsson starting tonight for the Islanders. So boom, right away, the marketing department goes in and calls up Purelator. Purelator, buy this one game. Purelator, lick the envelope game when it just has to get there. Or if it's going to be like a Minnesota Calgary game, brought to you by Somanax, when you just have to get to sleep.
Oh.
Sorry.
If it's going to be a one-game sponsorship for this game, it's got to be Excedrin. I mean, for Sid, right? It's got to be Sid at the end of the game holding a little green bottle saying, "Thank you, Excedrin." And
My headaches are all... You know, there was a great commercial in the 80s in Canada, and it aired a lot on Hockey Night in Canada for the obvious reasons, and it was for Tylenol. And it was just a one tight shot of Rose Cherry, the late wife of Don Cherry, and just having her deadpan to the camera... "Hi, I'm Rose Cherry, Don's wife. I know headaches. Let me tell you about Tylenol."
Phoenix Coyotes game sponsored by U-Haul.
Oh, that's good, actually.
It'd be FedEx, actually. Roy writes in, our good friend Roy, "Well, my entry is out for Hit the Kid. I had DiPietro followed by his shattering into a million pieces on the ice." I've been trying to tell people, if you picked Rick DiPietro for the Hit the Kid contest, it's a bad pick. His groin will give out before he even makes contact with Sidney Crosby.
Does it have to be an Islander, or could we get a Paul Orndorff-esque heel turn out of Matt Cook? Just when you thought I was a good guy.
No, just when you thought I was a baby face.
What's that?
He's reformed. He's not going to hit anybody anymore.
Okay.
It's like Ovechkin. Ovechkin doesn't hit anybody anymore either. Well, now the question of the day.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
I was just going to make a dumb Alexander Ovechkin
question of the day.
Joke.
What will we remember most from Sidney Crosby's night tonight? What will be the most memorable thing about Sidney Crosby's return to the ice? You can hit us hashtag MVSW on Twitter. You can email us at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. A few answers already rolling in for this one. His hat trick, says Axiom 720.
Wow.
I know, right?
Wow.
Hubris. Will Martinez, the ovation he gets when he steps on the ice. Jay Asquila, the Flyers beating Carolina will be the most memorable thing from Sidney Crosby.
Jeez. Keystone State's tough.
Chris Camuso. I'm just butchering names. Chris writes in, how ridiculously overhyped it was or will be. The NHL has become like ESPN was with Favre. The whole will he, won't he BS is old. Now, there's two ways to look at this, okay? The leading up to this moment for Sid, I think we can all agree, it became tiresome. It became painful. Like Merrick said, the entire, without Sidney Crosby, the Penguins were able to beat the Blue Jackets.
How did they do that without Sidney Crosby in the lineup? Let's go to the video evidence.
That whole thing became real wearisome.
Yeah.
But the attention given to this moment in hockey, while, I mean, granted, the minutiae of some of the reporting, oh my goodness, Sidney Crosby, he skated with his left foot first and then his right heading onto the ice. I mean, that kind of thing got real annoying real quick, but the coverage of it, the media swarm in Pittsburgh, the fact that NHL.com has a day-long Sidney Crosby live blog, I don't have a problem with it. It's a very important moment for the game. You're talking about a star who transcends hockey. How many of those do we have?
Right and now? A star who's, and I will still call it a collision, with Dave Steckel and the hit from Victor Hedman. I mean, and the nature of the injury afterwards, a couple of things happened. One, it changed the way the NHL looks at and treats concussions. And two, it changed the rules. Right, I mean, the NHL's spine really stiffened on anything above the shoulders when it became pretty apparent that Sidney Crosby was going to be out for a long time. So this was a situation that completely changed the game. And in a lot of ways, Greg, when you look at the entire recovery for Sidney Crosby, this was not just the Pittsburgh Penguins, but I also think the National Hockey League's sort of prototype and message to the sports world that this is how we handle concussions. This was their PR campaign on how we handle concussions. This is how we react to them, and here's what we do about them. Because at no time at all was there any pressure from anyone in the NHL or the Pittsburgh Penguins organization to get Sidney Crosby back on the ice sooner than when he felt that he was 100% to go. And I can't recall another situation where a player was cleared for contact as long as Sidney Crosby was, and he wasn't in the lineup.
But
I mean, this was the poster boy for how the NHL treats concussion recovery.
It's an overreaction, though. I mean, the rules are an overreaction. Nothing on the rule book now would prevent what happened with Dave Steckel in the Winter Classic,
or Victor Hedman, for that matter.
Yeah,
because that was a rub into the end boards. I agree.
Now,
absolutely.
On the one hand, it is sort of embarrassing that it took this Crosby moment for the NHL to wise up and try to tighten the rules. On the other hand, though, come on. I mean, we have a league now where there is a draconian enforcement of headshot rules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to the point where we have a de facto ban on contact with the head, almost.
Well, no, not necessarily, because Tyler Myers didn't get anything last week.
That's because he's tall.
Yeah, and he's hitting, the Dinah Zubris hit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that was still a shot to the head. We saw Ryan Malone. He didn't get anything for hitting Chris Campoli. So, I mean, there still is that wiggle room for incidental contact to the head, which I think you have to have. That's why we're going to get sidetracked on headshots here, but that's why I don't think you can ever have a blanket policy on headshots. It's just not practical.
We were going to have Sid's agent on, Pat Persone, today, but unfortunately, he is booked up. He is in the midst of traveling. The one question I had for him, and I'll just ask it for you now, and you can do your best.
I'll play the role of Pat Persone.
Okay. Yes, please. Right. Okay. What percentage do I owe you for this impression?
Oh, standard 15%. It's what everyone pays, kid. Don't worry.
The question I have for him is, how difficult was it for a guy like him or anybody inside Sidney's inner circle to sit by for the last 10 months and hear the enormity of the rumors, innuendo, scuttlebutt, just everything that came out about this kid?
Aren't you used to it though?
But hold on. I mean, it got hysterical. I mean,
yeah.
Like, you think about what McCown said back in March or April,
yep,
about somebody in Sidney Crosby's family advising him to retire.
Yeah.
I mean, retirement rumors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how difficult was it for these guys to sit here and see this guy who's simply trying to work his way back from an injury to go back and play the game that he loves, to see this guy's name being bandied about in all sorts of which way when it came to rumors?
Don't you think they're used to it? I mean, here's a guy who's been on, at least in Canada, and since he entered the National Hockey League and, you know, the NHL sort of en masse, you know, sports consciousness, here's a guy who's been a headline every single time he's either put on a baseball cap or put on a pair of skates. I think this guy is used to it, and this is just the world that he lives in. Is it frustrating? Is it annoying? Yeah, but I don't think you get to the level of being Sidney Crosby without having some defense mechanisms. Like every player that makes it to the NHL has heard so much about themselves and so much about their game, whether it's from a scout, whether it's from a coach, whether it's from a fan. Like, you really have to have some pretty thick skin by the time you make it to the NHL. And I think you develop defense techniques to sort of Tai Chi all that, to keep it away. And even if it's like a family member saying, you know, we've advised him to retire, as Bob McCowan mentioned in the summer with Sidney Crosby. I think you do have defense techniques or ways that you can just zone that out. Otherwise, you know, not just through the concussion ordeal with Sidney Crosby, but just making it through an entire season would be completely exhausting, don't you think? Like, don't you have to have those techniques already by the time you get there?
You'd hope so. You hope so.
You
have
to.
But I mean, it was all happening at a career crossroads for this guy. I mean, don't you think?
Yeah, and it was interesting the way this almost became, and now it really has become, his sort of step outside of, and this is nothing of his doing other than he just happened to get a concussion and he just happened to be a guy who's taken a long time to recover from said concussion. This was his moment where he became more than something than the game itself. It didn't become Sidney Crosby and the Rocket Richard Trophy or the Hart Trophy or the Art Ross or the Stanley Cup or any of that. It became Sidney Crosby as a public issue of safety on the ice. And that was his moment where he became
more, a symbol, like
more
Batman
than the game. Yeah.
Like Batman. Right, it became a symbol.
So we need, like, from City Hall in Pittsburgh, the big light to the sky with the big 87 on it.
He's the hero that we need. but not the one we deserve.
Wow.
It's true.
Wow. I'm going to go back in the shallow end because I'm treading water in your deep end right now, Wish. That's a little too deep for
me. Someone's got to bring the geek. Listen, I think what Rossi said before, by the way, the most interesting part of that little chat for me was he's been ready to come back. And people have asked me in any number of interviews, you know, when is he coming back? Why isn't he back? And I keep telling them, it's Sid's call. It's Sid's call to come back. So clearly he thought this game against the Islanders, who, let's not forget, broke a little point streak for our friend Mr. Crosby last year. Mm-hmm. This game against the Islanders this week, where they've got a couple of home games, you know, three home games this week for the Penguins, was the right time to come back. I think for the last few weeks, he could have played in any one of those games, but his head wasn't there yet. And you know what? That's saying something. When you consider what a mentally tough son of a bitch Sidney Crosby is, and that he's got to sit out until he's mentally ready to come back, that just shows you the magnitude of this absence and the magnitude of this rehab for this guy.
And think about how this recovery has changed recovery for every player now in the National Hockey League until the end of time. Like, when did you ever, Greg, you followed this game for a long time. Listeners, you guys have all and girls have all followed the National Hockey League and hockey in general for a long time, I'm assuming. That's why you listen to this podcast. Yeah. When did you ever hear, like up until now, really, when did you ever hear a team say, he'll play when he feels like he's ready?
I know.
This is foreign concept. This is virgin territory. This is new. This is completely new.
Shake the cobwebs and get out there.
Here's the smelling salts, Eddie O. Yeah. Get out there.
Well, I think that ties into a larger narrative about concussions, which is how many times when we, before the internet age, before the time of really this awareness of player safety that's crept into the league, how many times did we see guys stay out as long as these guys stay out now because of concussions? I mean, I guess Lindros might have been the first time that I was cognizant as a fan of a guy who missed a significant amount of time because of a concussion.
Yeah.
I don't remember LaFontaine being out of the lineup for like eons with a concussion.
But he was for a good chunk. Yeah. Right. I mean,
but were you aware of it? Were you aware of that as you are Matt Lombardi or David Perron or Sidney Crosby?
No, but I mean, I was aware of it. You know, when I really became aware of it was the Jeff Bookaboom when Jeff Bookaboom went out after Matt Johnson punched him in the back. That was the first one to me. That and the Adam Deadmarsh, but that was more whiplash to concussion. That's when I really started to tune into just how horrible, and because you started to hear the stories, right?
Right.
I mean, once upon a time, a guy's out with a concussion, you think, oh, he's out with a concussion. It's like a broken wrist. Only it's his head that's broken. Only it's his brain that's broken, and it's not his wrist. And you didn't really give another thought to it because no one really did.
Why doesn't he just rub some ointment on his brain?
You know, you know what? That's what happens. These guys from wherever, you know, good kid from Medicine Hat, he'd be right back in there.
Well, look, it's just a cobweb. Look.
But, you know, and this is where I get. This is where I get sort of weird about people that are quick to make grand pronouncements about concussions and cause and effect. This is, again, just scratching the surface of what we're beginning to know about brain injuries.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Right? And that's why when the NHL says we're going to take time to look at this, and, you know, there was a great blog on Yahoo about 3 weeks ago.
What?
Yes. Well, don't worry. It wasn't you, bro. It wasn't you.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You know, that really laid it out to me. In a lot of ways that, you know, we really don't know very much. So to make grand pronouncements for or against coming back fast or what this means for fighting, what this means for body checking, how this is married to dementia, how this is married to old age, for example, you know, to make grand pronouncements about it or assume that we know a thing or two about it, whatever side of the line you fall on, these other, depending on the issues that, you know, fall out of concussion, most namely fighting and violent, we just don't know.
We're able to take conversations in interesting places in the show, and I think that's why people dig it. So let's just take it in an interesting place. What happens if he gets hit in the head tonight and has to leave in the first period with a concussion? What happens? What's the reaction?
Oh, boy.
What is there? Because here's the thing. The narrative right now, every single member of the media that is in Pittsburgh right now is not thinking what happens if Sid gets hit in the head, has to go to the quiet room, doesn't come back for the second and third period. They're all thinking, what happens when he scores on his first shot? What will my lead be? How flowery can I make the pros? No one is thinking about worst case scenario. So let's think worst case scenario.
I think it depends on the hit. I think if it's someone that goes out to try to make a name for himself, if it's, you know, you mentioned Travis Hamonic before, or, you know, Nino Niederreiter or Jay Penn, whomever, if Kyle Okposo, someone wants to make a name for himself, then I think it's a problem. Then I think it's It's a big issue for the New York Islanders and that player, considering the history between these two teams.
If it's just an injury, if it's just a incidental contact, okay, and Sid has to leave, what do we say then? Now all of a sudden mm-hmm. the narrative shifts to, can this guy ever come back on a regular basis, or is his career over?
And it goes back to something, Greg, that you and I talked about on the podcast last week. What if, on the last few weeks where he was skating with contact but wasn't right there to play yet, what if that was the best that Sidney Crosby was ever going to get?
Yeah.
What if that was the best that Sidney Crosby was ever going to feel, and that was the top level at which he was ever going to perform? And the one thing that we started to understand with concussions, because Eric Lindros talked about it so often, whether it was the big Scott Stevens hit that we all saw, or whether it was something innocuous like his, who was it that got him when he was playing with the Rangers? Jason Doig. The Jason Doig hit when he played with the New York Rangers. I know, yeah. I love those references. The Jason Doig hit when he played with the New York Rangers. Well, the one thing we do know is every concussion is like peeling an onion.
Yeah.
And there are some chins, and we see this in boxing, we see this in mixed martial arts, we see this in hockey. You know, every chin has a number of punches in it. And every head has a number of hits in it as well. And everyone's number is different. Like Jim Thompson talks a lot about how fighting should be out because of the concussions he suffered, whereas I'll turn around and I'll have lunch with Brad May, who fought much more than Jim Thompson, but he's fine. You should make fun of Mayday, all the time, but he's fine. Like, every chin and every head has a number that is attached to it. Some guys are going to get hit twice. Some guys are going to get hit twice. Some guys are going to hit 200 times, and the effect is exactly the same.
You know, in fairness to Lindros, though, he kept on bringing up those hits because he had forgotten he had talked about them earlier. All right, let's go to headlines.
Concussion jokes.
Merrick versus Wyshynski. Headlines.
Remember when the world was safe for concussion jokes?
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore.
Now that Crosby's back, free game on bad bean jokes.
Yeah, Sydney's return makes the world safe again for concussion jokes. I'm probably wrong on that. All right, Dateline Columbus. Speaking of hits to the head, this is from Aaron Portsline. The Blue Jackets' morning skate took an ugly turn less than 20 minutes into the proceedings. A Rick Nash shot rattled the mask of goaltender Steve Mason, sending Mason to his elbows and knees, requiring help from trainers. Alan York has been recalled from the minor leagues to serve as Curtis Sanford's backup tonight against the Calgary Flames. Two thoughts here. First off, Sanford deserved a win against the Bruins. I felt terrible that he lost that game because he played outstanding.
Shootout's part of the game, bro. Shootout's part of the game.
Ah, shut up. We'll talk about that another time. The second reaction to this, of course, is that Rick Nash finally acting like a captain and taking care of the problem.
Oh, and somewhere Scott Arneal is saying, yeah, there'll be a little something extra in your envelope in the next 2 weeks. To Rick Nash. And
money on the board. Take out our own goalie.
All of you RPI fans from Adam Oates all the way down can rejoice because Alan York is back in the National Hockey League. Listen, that's been the... make light of it, and it's funny. Steve Mason's out, shot on the head from Rick Nash. But not to kick a guy while he's down, but let's kick a guy while he's down. That's been the problem. Right? It's not that the Columbus Blue Jackets need a coach. The Columbus Blue Jackets have needed a goaltender.
Well, the real issue here is that Nash shot high. Had he gone five hole, obviously Mason would have been fine. Dateline Buffalo. Sabres defenseman Tyler Myers, who was scratched recently, had surgery to repair a broken wrist and will be out at least a month, according to the Buffalo News.
They've wanted him to play tougher from day one this year, and I think it hit a crescendo after the Boston Bruins game, after which, as you mentioned, Greg, he was a healthy scratch. And then came back to try to lambaste Dinah Zubris into the boards in the game against the New Jersey Devils. But they are trying, Buffalo's been trying desperately to turn Tyler Myers into Chris Pronger and play that style of game. And I think you and I talked about it last week. I just don't know that he's that kind of guy.
Yeah,
like, there are just some guys that are just big and not nasty.
He's
a talented defenseman. He's a Calder Trophy defenseman. He's a great shutdown guy. He's got a hammer from the point. We saw him score two goals in a game last week as well. I just don't know that you can bring the nasty with Tyler Myers.
The real issue is if it's going to be okay that he's not that guy, or if people are going to, lambaste him every year like they do a guy like, say, Nick Antropov for being a giant, tall, scary dude who doesn't necessarily play that way.
Well, Antropov always... had the reputation of being the guy who spends more time in bandages than King Tut. So I think that was the real issue with Nick Antropov specifically, just that he couldn't stay healthy. And maybe he had, you know, too much extra attention from the Toronto Maple Leafs training staff. Oh, here comes the rookie, the number one draft pick. How come he gets all the time on the trainer's table and not me? But it is, you know, all of life and all of sports is managing expectations. And I think if you expect Tyler Myers to be big and nasty, you may get let down. Just take it for what it is. He's a talented defenseman who's a great shutdown guy who just happens to be big. Why do we make the assumption that because you're a big, huge defenseman, you have to be Chara or Pronger-esque? I know Jamie Oleksiak gets this as well. The Dallas Stars pick last year is playing in the OHL now. Just because you're big, does it mean you have to play nasty?
Who's that big-ass guy that played with Tampa and the Islanders?
Who, that big-ass guy that played with Tampa and the Islanders?
6 foot something or other. I forget exactly who this cat was, but he was another guy who didn't play big, even though he was big. Name will come to me. No. Anybody out there listening, just tweet me.
Yeah, tweet us up on that.
Dateline Brian McGrattan's phone, and Merrick, take it away.
Brian McGrattan, God bless him. And when's Brian coming on, Atlanta? Friday. Brian McGrattan's coming on Friday. Now, this is all in light of what happened with Aaron Asham and Jay Beagle earlier on this year. And Beagle, as we understand it, by the way, Bruce Boudreau said he had a little bit of a setback, so they're going back to day one with Jay Beagle. But after the fight, doing the nappy nap, and it's all over, and of course, we all remember the apology afterwards, and I was out of line. The NHL sent out memos to all 30 teams reminding them that that type of showboating after fights ain't kosher, and ain't going to happen on the NHL's watch, so please stop that immediately. Fast forward to last week. In a fight of the year candidate, it's early, folks, it's early. There will be better. Brian McGrattan against Jay Rosehill, at the end of which Brian McGrattan throws his arms up in the air to try to rally the crowd and get them all hyped up after a big win by Brian McGrattan. Received a phone call last week as well from the National Hockey League reminding him that such actions, you know, probably best remain in junior hockey where they belong. We don't do that type of thing in the NHL. To which I would say, Greg Wyshynski, the difference between the Asham celebration and the Brian McGrattan celebration is one was directed at the player and the other was just sort of a celebrating to fans. I don't know if you can split the hair on showboating, but that one didn't have the same sort of edge or nastiness or malevolence the likes of which Aaron Asham did on Jay Beagle.
Listen, as long as we don't get to a thing where everybody is doing a effing sack dance like they do in the NFL after every hit, which is an embarrassment, I think we can probably allow for a little human emotion slipping in from time to time after a fight, after surviving someone pounding you with their fists. Maybe we can allow for a little bit of emotion now and again.
You know me, I like it. Like, I like that type. I liked Alexander Ovechkin's hot stick celebration after the goal against Tampa. Having said that, this is why I love doing this podcast. That was stolen, folks. You know who did that originally? That was Terry Ryan, old former first round draft pick of the Montreal Canadiens. He used to do that when he played for the Tri-City Americans of the Western Hockey League. But Terry did it a different way. See, Terry could score 50 goals, and he could also fight anybody who wanted to cross his path. Terry Ryan, after scoring a big goal, would go to center ice, drop his stick, stare at the opposition bench, and then warm his hands up, or do it right in front of their bench, daring anyone to come off and try to stop him. And guess what? Nobody did. But that was a Terry Ryan celebration, folks. That wasn't Alexander Ovechkin's.
Dateline Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Flyers finally released their 2012 NHL Winter Classic jersey presented by Bridgestone. And it is as you'd expect. I mean, it looks like a Flyers jersey.
Don't like it.
And I think
like
my
it.
Problem with it.
Don't like
see,
it.
See, I don't like it because I feel like, you know how like when you go on vacation with your girl, your guy, and you're in a hotel and things can get kind of freaky because you're on vacation? The Winter Classic to me is the same sort of vibe. It affords you the opportunity to do something, and I really hate using this term, outside the box.
Oh,
the Flyers have a Flyer jersey. It's got black shoulder pads, it's orange, white nameplate on the back, looks like Flyers jersey. They had a chance to do something freaky. Give me a black and orange Montreal Canadiens barber pole jersey or some crazy shit like that. My problem with the jersey is not that it looks bad, because I think it looks good. My problem is that it could have been freaky deaky, like the Red Wings jersey at Fenway was at Wrigley was.
I appreciate your metaphor. And I will raise you an all rise, Your Honor, on that one. It's one of those situations where you're on vacation with your wife and she says, now, normally I wouldn't do this, but that is the kind of fun you can have at the Winter Classic with things like this. I'll tell you what. Here's my big
the
beef.
Winter Classic is vacation sex.
I essentially, think it's quite obvious now, yeah. Send the kids. The kids aren't around? Really? Here's my big problem with it. Philadelphia Flyers came in to refresh my memory here. After Ed Snyder went to Madison Square Gardens and saw Gump Worsley play net and said, I want to own a hockey team, the Philadelphia Flyers came into existence in which year again, Greg Wyshynski?
Well, was that, 73?
67. It was 67 expansion.
I'm sorry for not knowing that, folks. No. You kind of caught me off guard with the history question.
It's all good. That's okay. And listen, as long as you don't hit me with math, I won't hit you with history.
The 67 expansion.
It was 67 expansion. So since then, when have the Philadelphia Flyers had the strings around the neck? It seems as if when you want to indicate that something is retro or old school, it's the lazy man's option just to do the strings around the neck, to tie them, to make it look like not a hockey jersey, but a hockey sweater.
Yeah.
And that's my main problem with the Flyers.
So you don't like the laces on anything.
Well, I would love the laces for the Rangers. I would love the laces for the Leafs, for any teams that actually wore the laces as a piece of nostalgia, as a piece of throwback, right, Greg? But refresh my memory. When did the Flyers have the laces around their neck?
Yeah, 19 never.
19 never, exactly. So where does that come from?
The nostalgia department at Reebok that believes that's how you make a proper Winter Classic jersey. One more for
instant
you,
nostalgia, just add strings? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dateline Seattle, Washington.
Look out. You know, we were talking about this on Sources Say Saturday on Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet, presented by Boston Pizza. And John Shannon had this a little bit. This is playing off the Damian Cox piece last week that said, let's not, you know, this might be the end of the foray end of the desert. This might be the last year of the Phoenix Coyotes in Glendale. We talked about this vis-a-vis realignment last week, Greg. And John pointed out, quite correctly, that we shouldn't draw too quick a line between Glendale and Quebec City, even though there is a temporary rink in the Colisée, which could hold an NHL team for a couple of years, I suppose, still kicking around the NHL's offices, and this is to create a cross-border rival with the Vancouver Canucks. Seattle, in some people's mind in the NHL offices, is still an option for NHL. No, I guess this wouldn't be expansion, but rather relocation. Yes, it could be the return of the Seattle Metropolitans, winner of the Stanley Cup circa 1917. So let's keep that on the top of our mind when we're talking relocation or possible relocation for the Phoenix Coyotes.
I would love for there to be a team in Seattle. I think it's Seattle or Portland. Seems like such a
You want a Canadian team to go there, though.
Right? Oh, no, I don't care about that shit. We already had our fun making you guys cry when you lost Quebec and Winnipeg.
Greg wants to start the Make It 24 campaign.
No, the way I want it to play out is if things don't work out in Phoenix, I want that team to relocate to somewhere in the United States, be it Seattle, Houston, Kansas City, Vegas, wherever. And I want the owners in Quebec to have to pay the National Hockey League $1.7 billion in order to have the right to have a team there, because they'll pay it.
I think if I'm a member of the Board of Governors, I'm picking up what you're putting down, because I don't know that I want another Canadian. I don't know whether I want another American team to go to Canada without an expansion price tag to come along with it.
Right.
This is just leaving too much money on the table. Too much money. And you know what? And the Players Association, I would imagine, would feel the same way if that's going to count as HRR. Don't you think?
For sure. For sure. You know, unless they go hiding it.
No, that only happens in you-know-where, right around the corner from you, apparently. Look at that, Greg. Nothing to see here. Move along, Mr. Fear. Nothing to see
those
here.
Those are your puck headlines. Teams on the hot seats, sir. Over the weekend, we saw the Carolina Hurricanes stay the execution of their head coach by eking out a victory. We saw the Washington Capitals roll the ball a little closer towards the end zone, as they say, by getting their asses handed to them in Toronto. And then we saw the Anaheim Ducks continue their swoon. 1-6-3 mark in their last 10, looking hapless, scoring only 41 goals this season. That's on par with a team like the Calgary Flames. That is six more than the New York Islanders have scored, and that's a pretty high-powered offense to be middling. So the question is, which seat is the hottest, sir? Paul Maurice, Bruce Boudreau, or Randy Carlyle.
I think it's Paul Maurice still. I still think it's Paul Maurice. And did you get the sense yesterday watching that Cam Ward save on Tim Connolly that that save may have been the stay of execution? I don't know that it was a note from the governor like, hey, let's call this off. But this was more just sort of hitting pause on the tape deck. And we'll see what happens tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. And I'm sure Peter Laviolette would love to stick it to his old team and won the Stanley Cup with in 2006. But there's still, you know, there's still trouble. You know, there's still trouble back at the ranch with the Carolina Hurricanes.
I thought a one-goal loss to Buffalo and a one-goal victory over Toronto shows that maybe they've progressed a little bit. I mean, you've got to remember, this is a team that, but prior to this, shut out by Montreal, lost, gave up 5 goals to the Flyers, gave up 5 goals to the Rangers. I mean, they were playing terrible hockey. And the game in Montreal was one of the worst games played by a professional hockey team in the world this year.
Straight legs, man. A lot of straight legs on Carolina.
Exactly. So it's been a decent recovery. So it could be something more than just the stay of execution, I think. I think this weekend showed that they're willing to play for this guy, which should be the ultimate decision. The two ultimate decisions in changing a coach. Will the team play for this guy? Will they not play for this guy? And is there a better alternative? Now, to me, Carolina answered the second question by having Dave Lewis and Ron Francis and other guys at the ready. There are other alternatives to take over this job. But I think in the last two games, the Hurricanes showed that they'll still play for this guy.
The one thing that Jim Rutherford is as well, well, a couple things. One, he's loyal. And two, he doesn't do the obvious thing, right? Like, when have you ever seen the Carolina Hurricanes organization sort of on-ramp to something that you knew was going to happen? Whereas everyone clamored for Jim Rutherford to make a trade for a very specific position. When has that ever happened? Or when has he, you know, fired a coach when there's been a month-long buildup to fire the coach? He just doesn't do that. Like, Jim Rutherford does things almost in a way that will surprise you. And if everyone's clamoring for the head of head coach Paul Maurice, I think that Jim Rutherford will try to make a trade first to help his coach, specifically when you consider the background between these two guys. I mean, these two guys go back to the Ontario Hockey League together for crying out. This is a long-standing relationship. And Greg, as we talked about last week on the program, when you're in the Carmanos family, it's the familia. Like, you are in this family, right? So I think that he's still very much on the hot seat. I think that Jim Rutherford is trying to make a deal. I know there are players he is disappointed in, specifically the brother of someone who scored the Stanley Cup winning goal for the Carolina Hurricanes in 2006, whose name escapes me right now, but he wore number 15 in Toronto and was last seen with the Boston Bruins actually winning the Stanley Cup. But his name escapes me from right now and somehow got 4.25 out of the Carolina Hurricanes. I think
that
he
makes... Tomish?
What's that?
Is it Tomish?
Tomush. Did I ever tell you my favorite story about Thomas Caverly?
No, please.
Okay, just a quick one. So, Thomas Caverly, there was a year in Toronto with a 3 rookie defensemen, right? Tremblay, Markov, and Thomas Caverly. And there was one reporter in Toronto, I will spare this person this embarrassment. There was one reporter in Toronto who kept calling him Thomas Caverly. And Bill Waters, whom I worked with for years in radio doing a show called Leafs Lunch, went up to this reporter and said, What are you calling our defenseman? He said, oh, Thomas Caverly. And he said, why are you calling him Thomas Caverly? His name is Caberlet. He said, oh, no. I asked him what his name was. And he said, Tomas Caverly. And he said, really? Go back to him now and go ask him how he pronounces cheeseburger. Anyway, that's my Thomas Caverly story. So they're not thrilled with what Caverly has done and what hasn't done. So maybe Jim Rutherford does make a move. I think there's still moves to be made before Paul Maurice gets fired. At least Jim Rutherford's gonna try to do that. I don't see GM making any moves before they make a decision on Bruce Boudreau, though. Do you
think that? So you think the next move for them is the coach? Because you make a good point, which is that they've already made the moves in the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, once you add Hamrlik, Vokoun, Ward, other guys to the mix, you don't then try to shake it up. You already shook it up once.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, then the attention goes to the coach. I think he was nearly gone last year during the 8-game losing streak.
Agreed.
It wouldn't shock me to see him go now. But the other problem is, though, while I'm certain that certain players on this team would play better if Bruce Boudreau was not the coach, one of them wears number 8.
Hmm.
I think, well, listen, man, I think, listen, I don't know if you can say that he's quitting on him, but there's no question that I think that there are problems here between the coach and the player with regard to ice time, with regard to his role. There might be a bit of spring in his step if somebody else is back there. The problem I have with switching out Boudreaux is, what's the alternative? Because it's not about the regular season with this team. I think you can keep Boudreaux in there and you can keep your head above water. You could probably win the division. It's about the playoffs. So if you're going to make a change to give this team a kick in the ass, where's the change? Who do you bring in? What's the alternative to Boudreaux? What's the guy that's going to do something different than this guy has done to try to light fires under asses that are not cooking right now?
Here's the problem. If they do fire Bruce Boudreaux, whichever coach they bring in will essentially try to do what Bruce Boudreaux is trying to do right now to Washington, true or false.
Right.
As we talked about last week, get the horses back in the barn. Like, play a different style of hockey, right? And that's what Bruce Boudreaux is trying to do. Now, mind you, he's done it in a very pronounced way. The benching of Alexander Ovechkin, the benching of Alexander Semin are two pretty big deals around Washington, and rightfully so. But whomever they bring in, don't you think their first order of business will be to snap Ovechkin and Semin back to attention and teach them and try to teach them or encourage them how to play, quote-unquote? Because I agree with you about playoff hockey. At the beginning of the season, I said to myself, there are two teams that the middle of April can't get here fast enough for, and that's Vancouver and Washington, because there are no regular season questions for either team. Doesn't matter. 82 games, sure, whatever. Whatever, doesn't matter at all. The only questions we have of those two teams specifically are playoffs, and that's it. And I don't know if you make the coaching change right now, you bring in, you know, a hard-ass defense-first coach, take your pick of the guys,
but they'll
be doing the same
apart.
Thing.
He's been trying to preach defense. He's been trying to preach, hey, here's how you win in the playoffs.
But
if
then,
imagine if you brought in Ken Hitchcock here. Like, what would they would revolt before, the minute he walked through the door?
Okay, good point. Because then you say to yourself, well, maybe the problem, we're focusing so much here on the players and we're focusing too much here on the coach. Maybe the problem is George McPhee has brought in a very particular type of player, and as much as he's tried to color it in with the Mike Knubels, and that's the obvious one of the world, he's given Bruce Boudreaux a very specific style of team and type of team, and it's all been built around Alexander Ovechkin, their superstar, but he's given him one very specific type of team, and that type of play, and it pains me to say this because I wish it were successful because I love watching it so damn much, but that's not conducive to playoff success.
Defense wins championships.
Man, I wish the last 2 years the Washington Capitals would have won the Stanley Cup, because as we've seen before, general managers and teams ape that which has been successful before. And if Washington were successful and won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years, you know how much fun this league would be like every single day and every single game? If that style were successful, this league would rock every single night. The music's right. Let's dance all night if the Capitals were successful the last 2 years. And that's why it pains me that they weren't for the past couple of seasons.
Because the forces of darkness always win out in the end.
The
final hot seat is the Anaheim Ducks. Not so mighty, sir. 20 games into the season, 16 points, 1-6-3 in their last 10. And again, you look at this lineup, and the two concerns before the season are what's really coming back to haunt them. The fact is that they don't have secondary scoring worth a damn. They tried to go into the season with a lot of inexperience down the lineup, a lot of guys that simply don't have a lot of pop. That's why they go out and grab Hagman, who is -2 in 2 games so far, by the way. And the goaltending wasn't there all the time. I mean, Hiller's had good moments and he's had bad moments. He's had more bad than good. But when you don't put the puck in the net, other than maybe your second line most of the times, because the top line's not clicking quite yet, and your goaltending's not there every night like it should be, then you can see why they are where they are. The question is, does anyone pay for it with their job? Because I don't think it's going to be Randy Carlyle. After having signed a 3-year deal, I don't think it's going to be the coach that pays with his job. And I'll say this because I think the Hagman thing was the first salvo to say, look, there's going to be some changes here in this room. And I think the next one was they put what's the kid's name, Biloxi, on waivers today. I think they put him on. So they're now trying to just nudge him a little bit and say, hey, you know what? There's going to be some changes here if you go get your act together. And those two things to me portend a trade. I don't see the coach paying with his job.
About Carlisle, he's been there before. We recall the beginning of last season and the opening game against Detroit. Perry fights Datsyuk of all people. There's, you know, the first three games, I think there was a line brawl in pretty much every single game, punctuated by a really good one against the St. Louis Blues, I think in game three last season. So Carlisle has weathered this storm before, but I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that at the end of the day, it's not Randy Carlisle that doesn't walk
disagree.
The. I know that it's a year one of a 3-year deal, and I get that. But let's not forget too. Come the end of the season, there will be more coaching vacancies, and I think that he does end up on another NHL team if they toast him for this year, and then they just sort of roll the dice and say, yeah, chances are, you know, come next July, he's going to end up in the NHL again, and we're not going to have to pay the full freights of what's left on his contract. So I'm not so sure that Carlisle isn't the guy, even though it doesn't look like the wisest financial move, considering that they just re-upped this guy for another 3 years. It wouldn't surprise me if Randy Carlisle at the end of the day becomes that guy who's the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting. Mm. All right, so the big story, of course, tonight is the return of Mr. Sidney Crosby with the Pittsburgh Penguins against the New York Islanders. Very, very, very exciting. Dave Lassiter is looking forward to seeing that a player could score 10 goals in a game tonight and still not be the lead story in the National Hockey League. Keith from Lighthouse Hockey writes in, he can't wait to see... He said that my giant neon arrow pointing at the goal and flashing a welcome back Sid sign on top of it. Mm-hmm. He says that is still a better option than Rick DiPietro between the pipes.
Oh, snap.
Ace Suicide Pass writes in.
He's good.
That lengthy pregame ceremony commemorating the much ballyhooed return of Zebnik McCulloch tonight.
He is back to block some shots, ladies and gentlemen.
A little bit overlooked.
Ace also sent us a really interesting that we were talking about the Canadian dollar bills. I didn't know this. I'm going to have to go look at it. I had a five in my pocket. All kids on the Canadian $5 bill are right-handed shots. I got a five right here.
Obviously portending a conservative government.
They are. Look at that. Stephen Harper is taking delight. Look at that. They're all right-handed shots.
All right. Before we get to the talking points tonight, let's hear what Sid had to say at practice today. Sidney Crosby talking about his big comeback in the National Hockey League.
I have no idea what to expect as far as how I'll feel and things like that. So I'm sure that's just something that, as the game goes on, I'm sure Dan will get a better feel for that. Anybody who's gone through this and missed this amount of time, you've got to make sure that you get involved early and get that first hit under your belt. And maybe that means having to initiate a little bit more myself as far as my confidence level of getting hit and stuff. It's all there, and I feel confident going into those areas and getting contact. Never been away from hockey for this long, so I'm just excited to be able to play again.
The most electrifying man in the history of interviews.
Finally, the Kraz has come back to console.
If you smell a little of what the Kraz is cooking.
I hope he hammers someone for a shift.
Well, somebody said, Brody King 84 on Twitter writes in, how great would it be if Crosby drops the gloves tonight? Wouldn't that be great?
No.
Right off the face-off.
No, man.
He drops the gloves, has a fight, then he rips off his helmet, he breaks a bottle over his head, and then stabs one of the Islanders repeatedly with it. That's what I'm talking about.
That's got a sort of...
That's a comeback right there, sir.
For everyone in BC will love this reference. That's got a sort of Al Tomko-esque vibe about it with the bottle over the head. No. I think now so more than ever, and I love the fact that Crosby would throw down with Ferentz and Crosby would throw down with Matty Niskanen and stuff. But, man, I think this has to be the end of Sidney Crosby fighting, period. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Done. Done. Over. Finished. That was fine. We know you did it before, dude. You don't have to do it. And do you think that a Pittsburgh Penguin player, like, let's say Sidney Crosby does throw down the gloves and he's going to snap with somewhere down the road, which Pittsburgh Penguin player allows him to engage in that fight? Like, if there's any, I don't care who it is on that.
Somebody will just tackle.
Someone's got to jump in.
It's like when Ovechkin was shoving back and forth somebody, and Matt Bradley kind of slid in and
Steve
took
Downey.
The fight for him.
He was going to fight Steve Downey. And in comes, no, you're not, Vovi. Forget it. You're a meal ticket. Yeah. And I'd be very curious to see what happens because a lot of people are, we've heard this for so long. Why do you have to fight after a big hit? Why do you have to fight after a big hit? What if Crosby gets thumped tonight, gets caught between the blue lines, with a perfectly clean body check?
Mm-hmm.
What's the response?
the response will be the opposite
of what the Buffalo Sabres
did for Ryan Miller. The response will be Penguins players actually taking out weapons like the fight in Anchorman, maces and nunchucks and small daggers and killing, murdering whoever did that on the ice in center ice. Blood spilling everywhere. It'll be like a scene out of Sudden Death. Talking points tonight, Merrick.
Yep.
Our talking points segment to close out the show. How many shots will it take for Sidney Crosby before he scores his first goal of the season? How many shots?
You know me. I'm a sucker for a great story. Sidney Crosby scores on his first shot.
I will take the over on that. I think Sidney Crosby does not score tonight. I think Sidney Crosby scores later in the week. Not tonight.
St. Louis or Ottawa? Or does he wait for Montreal, the Bell Center?
I think it'll be Ottawa just to ratchet up the drama about, oh my God, Sidney can assist things, but his goal scoring has been lost forever because of his neurons not working. Talking point number two, total number of points for Sidney on the season. This is Bodog's number. Total number of points for Sid on the season, over under 80.5.
Oh, that's a lot. I'm going under.
Yeah, I'm going to go under on that, too. I agree with you. I think that is a hefty number for him to clear.
That's
if he was at the same clip as before the injury, for sure. But I just can't see
him being that player that we saw last year until the injury.
I am not the most conservative wagerer, but I'm going to be conservative on that one. Talking point number three, final talking point. Who has the better chance to stick it to his old team on Monday night, Merrick? Sheldon Soure, Pete DeBoer, or the one we're all waiting to see, Boyd Gordon against the Capitals?
I'm going to go with Sheldon Soure. Now, I got conflicting reports this morning. Did Soure talk to the Edmonton media or not? Did he?
Originally, the plan was that he did not want to talk to the Edmonton media, but he did come around once everybody that was from Edmonton in Dallas decided to raise a stink about it on Twitter, did talk to them.
Man, we've seen Twitter suspensions. Now we're getting Twitter to talk people into doing interviews they don't want to do. Man, he's got that shot, and all he needs is to get it off once. It's one of the hardest pills in the NHL. If I'm going to pick one, I like the Pete DeBoer return story, and your Boyd Gordon point is a good one, but I'm going to go with Sheldon Soure.
I will take Pete DeBoer. I think the Devils are going to play for this guy tonight. I think the Devils see this guy as... You know, they're kind of digging what's happening right now. They've got some positive momentum. I got a feeling they're going to play for DeBoer tonight, and I think the Devils win in Florida for their guy.
And if it is, then it's going to be David Clarkson, whom Pete DeBoer had in the Memorial Cup winning Kitchener Rangers of the OHL.
David Clarkson, by the way, pulled off a hell of a little give and go with Eliash over the weekend. Clarkson surprised me because Clarkson for years he's had one move, which is a wraparound. That's it.
Although on the shootout, when they call Hunches on the shootout, he usually scores, though.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, he does have that. You know, I talked to David Clarkson when I was doing Hockey Night in Canada Radio. This is 2 years ago. Do we have time? Quick little story. Yeah, I don't have fully stupid stories. I love this story from David Clarkson. David Clarkson was playing with the Belleville Bulls of the OHL, and he wasn't getting much ice. This is before he ended up going to the Kitchener Rangers. Wasn't getting much ice time, wasn't playing at all, and he called his dad up. He's a Toronto boy, and said, "Dad, I'm quitting the OHL. I may just quit hockey. It's going nowhere for me. I'm not playing. I'm just going to quit." You know what his father said to him, Greg Wyshynski? He said, "Okay, that's fine if you want to quit, but don't tell me. I want you to call your grandfather who served in the war and tell him you're going to quit." And David said, "Okay, I'm going to keep playing." Ended up going to the Kitchener Rangers, ended up winning a Memorial Cup, and eventually made his way into the National Hockey League. Go tell your grandfather who served in the war that you're going to quit. That's
awesome.
Harsh parenting.
By the way, I think this might have been it. Was there a giant defenseman who played for the Islanders by the name of Andrew McDonald?
Andrew McDonald.
Yes, there was. Hold on. This is the guy that I'm thinking of. Hang on one second here. This cat, Andrew McDonald. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, he wasn't giant at all. He was 6'1". Fuck, I can't remember who this cat was. It'll come to me. I thought I had it. I thought it was real. Going to be a real genius there for a second.
Nolan Jonkman?
No, it wasn't Jonkman. It was somebody else who was really tall. Or maybe I'm just...
Evgeny Artukin?
No, it wasn't Artukin. It was somebody... Damn it. All right, it doesn't matter. Listen, my day's already ruined because I brain farted on 67 for the Flyers.
Don't worry about that.
I've not been embarrassed by the failure to recite a fact since I forgot that Daniel was the goal-scoring twin on Bill Simmons' podcast. I might have to drink my pain away today.
Don't worry about it, man. You know what? Alcohol is, what was it that was said? The cause of and the... And the solution to all solution of life's problems.
All right. Well, there's the podcast for today, episode 6 of Merrick versus Wyshynski. We will join you tomorrow. Actually, we're on all week, by the way, for those of you in the States.
Are you doing your
holiday coming up?
You're cool for Thanksgiving and everything?
No, I'm not doing Thanksgiving. You said you want to be on Thanksgiving. But you would not want to.
Are we going to do the guest Wyshynski day?
Yeah, you should, right?
Are we, right?
I'm going to be around Friday. So Friday, tomorrow, and Wednesday will be regular programs with me and Merrick, and then maybe he's going to have some replacement on Thursday.
I want to guest Wyshynski.
Other loudmouth American trolling the streets of Toronto. He can stick in a chair for an hour.
Loudmouth Americans, no. How about if I get Tyler Dello instead?
Well, that's the antithesis of me. That's somebody smart and Canadian.
I give Tyler a call. I get Dello on
the
show.
Thanks, everybody, again. Again, fantastic first week. We really appreciate that.
Hey, to everyone who listened.
On Canada podcasting and all that other shit.
Loved it, man. All the tweets, love it. This is the most fun I have every single... Elena, what do I say when I'm done with the show every day? Most fun I have, like, every single day, and it's only been a week. Thanks, everyone, for all the tweets, all the love, all the emails, all the everything. Everything is everything. Thank you so much.
And thank you, everybody. Yeah, this is my third favorite thing of the day, behind kissing my daughter in the morning, my bowel movement, and then also then this.
Well, because so like you've put third... your 2 o'clock masturbation session on hold now.
That's right.
For this podcast.
Good callback, sir.
We all make sacrifices, Greg. We all make sacrifices.
I'm Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet. What am I doing tonight? Calgary, Columbus, and then Hockey Central tonight with Morrison, and I think we got Mayday in tonight. So there you go. There's my program.
Thanks, everybody. Take care. Thank you.